Even though Syria is a sovereign country, its land and air is being violated. Coming on the heels of Israeli airstrikes and a U.S. permanent presence in northern Syria, now Turkey has executed an operation that includes Afrin to rid it from what it calls the YPG terrorists without the approval of the Syrian government. It even shelled Syrian government forces when they tried to enter the area. What are the Syrian forces' goals there, and Turkey for that matter? And why is the U.S. not helping Turkey in their fight against the Kurds, even though it claims Turkey is its ally?
Shouting slogans of unity, this is how pro-Syrian army troops entered Kurdish-held territories from Al Ziyara checkpoint in northern Syria, following a deal between the government and the Kurdish YPG militants. Heading to Afrin, they drove pickup vehicles equipped with heavy machine guns. They said they were coming to help their brothers.
This is the unity of Syrians. The Syrian people are one. Whatever their ethnicity is, we are heading there to protect everyone inside.
But Turkish drones were watching. Only 5 minutes following the troops' move, Turkey heavily attacked Al Ziyara checkpoint to stop the support from coming to Syrian Kurds. Pro-government forces' entry to Afrin is believed to be a game changer in the course of developments in northern Syria. As you can see just behind me here, you can see the Turkish forces are shelling this road with mortar shells, this road which the pro-Syrian government forces just used to enter Afrin. In Afrin, life goes as normal despite the ongoing threat of Turkish attacks and the tens of strikes already launched. Locals say civilians have also been the target of the attacks.
They are targeting civilians, children, villages and homes. They targeted our homes in Kaf Samra too. 20 homes were razed to the ground. Is this right? Is this humanity?
Turkish forces have been waging a military offensive against Afrin and its surrounding towns and villages, along with Turkey-backed militants, for over a month now. They are aiming to wipe out the Kurdish People's Protection Units, the YPG, and the Women's Protection Units, the YPJ, both of which are regarded as terrorists by Ankara. Hamad Ali, Press TV, Afrin.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, Martin Jay, is an award-winning journalist who joins us from Beirut. We also have Hatem Yavuz, commentator and political observer, who joins us from Istanbul. I'd like to welcome you both, and let me first start with our guest there in Istanbul, Hatem Yavuz. We are looking here at a situation where the Syrian government forces have entered an area by the name of Afrin, which I'm sure you're familiar with Turkey, giving a warning beforehand, even though the latest is that indirectly they are open for talks. But at the same time, if the Syrian government forces or any entity that Turkey has said supports in any shape or form the Kurds there, that they would then be legitimate targets. What is the goal, do you think, that Syrian forces have there, and how do you see this tension being played out between Turkey and Syria?
What I find interesting is the YPG go and ask for help from the Syrian government, whereby it's the YPG, well, we call it the PKK, another arm of the PKK, have betrayed the Syrian government by siding with the U.S. forces. So if the YPG is to be supported by the Syrian government or the Syrian forces, the Turks will also attack like normal and create a buffer zone between the Syrian forces and the YPG on the border of Afrin and Aleppo and all that region.
Uh-huh. Martin, Jay, it would be very easy to see things perhaps that way, but if the Syrian forces have been warned, I don't think that they would just go in to become legitimate targets. So are you convinced that they are there to support the YPG, as Turkey calls them, knowing that the Turks are going to target them, or are they there for another reason?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I don't think the word support is the correct word at all. I think they probably do have their own agenda there, which is to make a statement against both the Turks and the YPG that this is ultimately Syrian sovereign territory. And, you know, we should not forget in the scramble of media frenzy, and some of it, frankly, I can't even believe anyway. Some of the reporting coming from Afrin is dubious at best. But we shouldn't forget that Turkey's role and presence in northern Syria is an illegal one. No one invited Turkey there. So, you know, we've got to look at this into a correct perspective. Earlier on, your guest mentioned the relationship between the YPG being the so-called enemies of the Assad government. I think what Afrin has proved and what we've learnt in other skirmishes around Syria and Iraq is that the old adage in the Arab world that your enemy's enemy is your friend is not necessarily true. It doesn't always work like that. Because what we've seen in the last few years is actually that it's not true that the Assad government and the YPG or the Kurds in general are at each other's throats in Syria. They're not really enemies. They haven't really fought that much in the last 6 years. There have been a couple of battles, but very short ones.
But I think what we've seen now is a real alliance. The YPG and the PYD have sided with the US.
Assad forces... Yeah, they are. They're aligned to the US for the moment, but that's simply because I think there's been a misunderstanding from the Trump administration of the geopolitics of the region.
Armory is not a moment.
Well, we'll see how this pans out in the next few months, but I don't see the Trump administration really having a long end game in Syria, and certainly not with the YPG. And to answer an earlier point, we're not even sure how this relationship with
Turkey... Well, just
Turkey
last week they've confirmed another $500 million for the YPG.
Ludicrous situation whereby
the US.
Yeah, well, we've heard all these kind of stories, haven't we? We've also heard $2.2 billion over the next few years until 2022. I mean, what can we believe? Yeah. You know, and I think... To take a step back and take a more sober account of what's going on, if I can just make a point, to take a step back
and take a more sober analysis. Martin Jay, go ahead, finish your point. I'm sorry. Hatem Yavuz, 1 second. Martin Jay, go ahead.
The point I was trying to make is that what's interesting about what's going on in Afrin is there is an opportunity for everybody to reach some sort of compromise agreement. If Assad's forces can enter that region and perhaps the fighting can stop and it can actually kickstart a process of dialogue, which almost certainly Russia would be in the center of, then you may have a scenario where everybody can walk away from a new war in Syria, and whereby the Turks get what they want, which is essentially a stronger border with Syria.
Very well. Hatem Yavuz, before you continue, just so you know, there's a delay. Hatem Yavuz, 1 second. Hatem Yavuz, just 1 second. No, before you continue, I just want to let you know there's a delay with our guests there in Beirut when you make comments. So if you don't mind, when you do make your comment, to wait and have Martin Jay respond to you. Sure. But right now, go ahead with your reaction to Martin Jay there. Go ahead.
Right, okay. Assad forces, they do have the rights to come in after the operation is finished and there is a stability, local regional government in Afrin and all that whole border area between Turkey and Syria, when there's no rockets flying into the Turkish soil, when Turkey has 3.5 million refugees, Syrian refugees, 2.2 million are from that 35-kilometer buffer zone from Afrin all the way up to northern Iraq. Yes, then once there is a stabilization period, of course, it belongs to Syria. That soil belongs to Syria. But does it belong to Assad regime? It may belong to the next government.
Martin Jay?
So yes, Turkey's not there to annex the country. Okay? Turkey's not there to... Yes, Turkey will go in, control, establish a regional government, maybe with its hegemony over there, and hand it over to the state of Israel. State of Syria.
Okay, let's get a reaction there. From Martin Jay. That was a slip of the tongue that is going to be hard to eliminate, but it's okay. Martin Jay, go ahead.
Yeah, that was an unfortunate Freudian slip. But look, going back to the original point, I think that was a slight oversimplification of the situation to actually say that that the YPG have been shelling the Turkish side. I mean, how many times has that happened in the last couple of years? I mean, there's just a number of incidents. You know, this idea that the YPG is by default a terrorist organization
times
and
in,
an immediate
in last
threat
3 months.
To Turkey's stability. But there were retaliations, though. I mean, it wasn't just one side, was it? You can't say that it was just isolated examples. There was an exchange on both sides. If you talk to the YPG, they will say that they come under attack as well. But this idea that the YPG is a terrorist organization is, I think, hard to sell, certainly to an international audience. I mean, the link between PKK and the YPG is
honestly,
a tenuous
honestly,
one. Yes,
seen,
they support each other ideologically.
Hold on.
But, you know, what we haven't... Let me finish making my point. Hang on. I think that Turkey is being very naive and is not really understanding the full implications of acting like a regional hegemony. You know, for years Turkey supported extremist groups, Al-Qaeda groups in the north of Syria. Some which
and
conveniently
the US
worked
is
for
doing
their benefit
very, very,
by fighting
a very
the Kurds.
Good job as well.
Others
so everyone
for...
that's involved is stupid.
Yeah. No, but it's just very naive to assume that Turkey can expect nothing, no payback at all, no retaliation at all, no regional problems at all by playing this role for the last couple of years. You know, it rolled its sleeves up. It got very messy. And it never assumed that the SDF or the YPG now would be in the strong position that it has now. And I think there's a certain fear and a certain paranoia from the Erdogan government that there is going to be or will be
okay.
retaliations. And he's probably overstepped the mark with this crazy idea of having a border zone or a buffer zone or whatever you want to call it. You know, it's delusional vision of hegemony. You know, Turkey is believing now that it's taking the right steps to become...
It was the U.S. that...
Okay, Hatem Yavuz, go ahead. I'm sorry, Martin J. Hatem Yavuz, go ahead.
It was the U.S. I'm sorry about this. I mean, Turkey said about the buffer zone and no-fly zone for the last 3.5-4 years, okay, in order for the refugees not to influx into Europe and into Turkey. So what you're saying is totally irrelevant. And when you say there's a difference between Kurds and terror groups that have Kurdish origin, those terror groups are the same, copy-paste, same people in the uniforms of the YPG that are PKK, which is a listed terror group, which on the UN resolution of 72/123, Turkey has the right to defend itself and to create what it's called the buffer zone. If the damage is in its soil and territory, it's not out there to annex it, okay? If it wanted to annex it, it could have done that 6 years ago, very easily.
All right. Martin
J. And Turkey does not need the U.S. to protect Turkey's borders.
Okay, now this is where we're trying to understand what's going on, Martin J. Please try to explain this to us. It's a new landscape somewhat. Turkey is not the same Turkey as years ago. Its relationship with Russia, its relationship with Iran, and I'm guessing its relationship with the U.S., in terms of the U.S., has taken a U-turn. But these four together have to come up with some kind of agreement, it seems. How do you describe the dynamics that exist between these four in order to go ideally after what you said, an opportunity now for a political move to try to resolve this war on Syria?
I think it's the hardest thing for Turkey to do under Mr. Erdogan, because he's proved in the last couple of years that he tends to swing from one extreme to the other geopolitically. He creates new relationships, he trashes them, then he breathes new life into them again. And I think this is one of the key points, one of the main reasons why the Trump administration has not taken him very seriously from the very early days of when Trump took office, and there was a lot of optimism in Ankara that the Turks would get a deal which worked for them for the extradition of Yulin and other such issues that were on the table. He wanted very badly promises from Trump from day one that he wouldn't carry on arming the Turks. let's face it, the Americans cheated them, and I think there was a great deal of distrust from the American side, and that's really created this problem. But it's true, since in the last couple of years, Erdogan has improved relations quite dramatically after the downing of the jet with Russia, and he's looked towards Russia to play a key role, and I think that's what we'll see happen in the next few days and few weeks. I think Russia will play a central role in all of this. I mean, I was quite surprised myself, personally, in the early days when this hoo-ha of Afrin came into the media spotlight and Russian forces were pulled out of the area, as well as the Air Force. You know, I thought that was a very clever and very tactical play by Putin. It seems to be that he wants to create a situation whereby he is in the center of this crisis and only he can resolve it. And I think if Erdogan is smart, he'll let that roll to a certain extent, you know, but geopolitically, no one has the confidence in Erdogan. That's the problem. He just jumps about all over the place. You can't actually keep up with him at some point. Barely a week goes past without him threatening relations against old friends or creating new enemies. You know, it's really difficult to put long-term trust into him in the region. He often says you can't trust the Americans, but can we really trust the Turkish leader when he's got presidential elections coming up next year? You know, how much of what's going on in Afrin now is really about media and public relations spin to build up his stamina, his virility as a nationalist, new Ottoman-like character in the region who's going to give Turks back the glory that they once had in their history? You know, this is what I'm tending to sense here. I tend to believe this is really about his own presidential campaign, rather about a long-term, serious geopolitical strategy for Turkey itself.
Go ahead, Mr. Yavuz, go ahead.
Hold on. I think Erdogan, as the nationalism going on in Turkey today has started in 2016, July 15. So we don't have to, and I believe that enough of the media propaganda that's pumped into the nationalism has worked to a dramatic degree, but it's also had its backfires as well. This operation, yes, you are right, and you are correct in your comments, it was an American fumble, not a Russian fumble. So when the Turks saw the Americans, as I mentioned in the last program on this the debate, that the Americans in the foreign policy are unofficially kind of bankrupt, because nobody's really believing on what the administration really wants to do. On the east side of the Euphrates, that was the limit for the Turks. However, you've got the DOD, Department of Defense, funding the east side of the Euphrates, and you've got the CIA funding the operations on the west side of the Euphrates. But they're all American. So that's why when Turkey says, stay on the east side of the Euphrates and your so-called brothers in arms of NATO just turns a cold shoulder and starts supplying terrorist groups, which is an official terrorist group, which is against the UN Act and could be sanctioned against the US, which the US will never listen to, that you're supplying terror groups officially with armory, mm-hmm. with a uniform called SDF.
Right.
And all those personnel that were caught in those uniforms were PKK.
Yes. So. Yes. Let's look at what Russia has said. And the foreign minister, Martin Jay, I'd like to get your reaction on. He has said the fact that some time ago, part of Kurdish population, I'm quoting him, in Syria's north has declared autonomy didn't help the resolution. Neither did the actions of the U.S. and its coalition aimed at supporting those intentions. Kurdish autonomy and even the creation of local governing bodies, which were openly introduced as insubordinate to Damascus. Is the U.S. still continuing that plan? And your reaction to what the foreign minister of Russia has said there?
No, I think there is some validity there, you know. But I think we should also be looking forward to perhaps a new chapter in the relations between the Kurds in northern Syria and the Assad regime. Because I think Afrin is proving that maybe they can work together and maybe they can have interests in one another's longer-term political prospectus. I mean, the idea of Syria becoming Balkanized was a Western idea. which wasn't really very well received by Assad himself, but it was taken on board by Putin just a few months ago when they had discussions with Assad. You may well remember that classic AP photograph of Mr. Assad embracing Putin, you know, when he was talking about the possibility there and then of breaking Syria up into regions, a bit like sort of Germany after the Second World War, to decentralize power, to give perhaps a stronger opportunity for the Sunni majority in some of those regions. You know, I think that was an idea that could have been kicked about, could have been explored further. It's been rejected by Assad. He believes now he's in a stronger position than ever. So, you know, they've reached out to one another in the past. I think at the beginning of the war, there was an opportunity where Mr. Assad reached out and offered the Kurds some sort of a deal. That may well happen in the future. But, you know, the interesting thing, and I've written it many times in my editorials, is that what we really need to be seeing is a new roadmap for Syria whereby Mr. Erdogan in Turkey actually starts to talk and opens a dialogue with the Assad government. I know that's a tall order, but I think it's possible. I think it's reachable.
Okay, we got 30 seconds to give you each. Hatem Yavuz, how quickly can this turn around and for there to be an all-out confrontation between Turkey and Syrian forces? In 30 seconds, if you can tell us the risk or the possibility of that.
Right now, President Putin has said its word to the Assad regime and to Assad to pull back. And Turkey sent warning shots yesterday on purpose. Did not want to hurt any Syrian forces. But if they enter Afrin and support the YPG, or PYD, whatever you call that group, I just simply call it PKK, they will be bombarded.
Okay.
And Turkey has.
I got to give Martin Jay now 30 seconds. Sorry, Hatem. Martin Jay, same question to you. Possibilities of an all-out confrontation, of it spiraling out of control. How high a risk is it right now?
If I can have my 30 seconds.
Go ahead.
I think the strong words from a weak stomach, I think, can be applied there to Mr. Erdogan's threat to the Assad government and any of the Iranian militias that he's able to muster to put into that region. I don't think Mr. Erdogan is ready for a new Vietnam scenario for himself, which would destabilize him at the ballot box in Turkey if he actually wants to take on in a proper military confrontation, you know, with no holds barred against the Assad government and its forces. I think that would be absolutely suicide for him.
Thank you. Exactly 30 seconds. Martin Jay, award-winning journalist there from Beirut. Thank you. Hatem Yavuz, pleasure having you. Commentator and political observer there from Istanbul. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. For Mikhail Vitavo, entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.